Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
Hey, Ro, how are you, man?
Good. It's been a while. How have you been?
Yeah, brother. It's good to see you again.
Great to see you.
Let's make it happen.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Wilson. Joining me today is Ro Khanna. He is the congressman who represents most of Silicon Valley, and he has some deep insights into what's going on in what is the economic and, weirdly, the social engine of America these days. So I want to welcome you to the show, Ro. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you making the time. I wanted to start by asking a question that has been buzzing around Silicon Valley in the last few days. And you've been warning about it. Is there a tech bro migration to Donald Trump?
Well, Rick, first of all, great to be on. Always like your tweets because you manage to phrase things with a punch and an insight that is unique. And I usually scroll past most of the others. So let me say this. You know, the truth is that in 2020, there used to be a huge stigma to being a Trump supporter in Silicon Valley. If folks were for him, they were doing it very quietly. Now he has 20-25% of the top tech leaders. So 75%, probably 80% are still with the president. They recognize the president's better on chips and science, on an innovation agenda, on clean tech. But Trump has managed to get 20-25%, and that's real. And we can discuss why and what we need to do to win some of them back.
There's always been, I guess, in Silicon Valley, kind of libertarian-ish streak. The David Sachses of the world, the Peter Thiels of the world, they have, I guess they've come out in the daylight now. I mean, Thiel was with him last time, cooled off, came back, but Sachs and some of that Elon adjacent crowd seem to be much more aggressive cheerleaders than they certainly were in the past.
They have, and some of them were Hillary Clinton or Obama supporters. So the question is, you know, why have they moved? I would say there are a few reasons. Some that are addressable, some not. The addressable parts are there's a concern on blockchain that the Democratic Party has been too negative on blockchain. We can. Sure. You have your view, but that's actually a big issue in among a lot of these entrepreneurs because it signals sort of an attitude towards innovation, entrepreneurship. The second thing where you're never going to, I mean, there's just a philosophical disagreement, is they think that DEI has gone too far. Now, my view is that we need to do more to make the Silicon Valley inclusive, that we actually have too few Black women entrepreneurs and Latino entrepreneurs and folks from Middle America. But there is this sense that, DEI has gone too far, and that's just a difference of opinion. And then there is a sense among some of them about issues of foreign policy. They disagree with the president on Ukraine. They disagree with the president on the spending there and tend to be anti-war or skeptical of overseas intervention. That's one of the issues. And then finally, there's just a contrarian spirit to it and a sense of, if Trump's showing up, Robert Kennedy showing up, Biden is not showing up. Why we've invited him? Why have him come on?
And, right.
Some of it is just as simple as that.
I think you're right there. There is it's not just libertarian, it's contrarian. And I think, you know, as for the DEI thing, I worry so much about these guys from Stanford and Harvard. I just don't know how they're going to make it in the system. So I want to ask you a couple questions about tech, which is an area you're very involved in, very smart on. So I have a twofold question. Is America ready for AGI as artificial intelligence really sweeps into the economy? And the second question in that is Congress ready?
Congress is not ready, and let's distinguish the sort of generative AI from generalized AI. So generative AI is, of course, just large language models that all it does, Rick, is a lot of language and can predict basically your next sentence. It's sort of autocomplete on your phone, but taken to the nth level. And, you know, that is something that Congress needs to figure out. How do we have appropriate regulation, especially when it comes to our kids, like the Kids Online Safety Act, 68 co-sponsors in the Senate. That should pass in the House. You know, I was just before this, Scott Galloway was saying there have been 40 hearings in Congress on kids' safety, zero laws. I mean, we've got to pass something to protect kids. The other area of generative AI that needs to be regulated is bots. I mean, you can have in the election all of these bots being created with misinformation, without any watermarks. That needs to have regulation. Generalized AI, I think, is still a ways away. I mean, that would mean that people actually are capable of reasoning as human beings. But I think we obviously need to have safeguards for that. But I think we need to focus first on the generative AI and the language models, and how do we make that productive and not the negatives.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very on point, because the generative AI models now can cause a lot of chaos just on their own if they're misapplied in politics or the economy more broadly, I think. But as for Congress, you know, they do not seem to catch up a lot of the time. I mean, you and a handful of others keep up. But, you know, there are still some series of tubes type guys to do an old throwback who do not understand that everything's been fundamentally reshaped by technology in this country. On the one thing that in the last few years they do seem to have gotten, and I think the president's leadership on this was really valuable, is the CHIPS and Science Act. I mean, we really now are looking at the possibility of America reshoring, bringing back chip and semiconductor manufacturing to the country for the first time in probably two decades, right?
Absolutely, Rick. And I usually am humble, but that was one of the bills I wrote with Senator Schumer and Todd Young. And we worked on it for 3 years, and I'm glad President Biden's leadership got it through. I mean, Donald Trump never – we were trying to get it through, by the way, under Donald Trump for all his let's bring manufacturing back. Couldn't ever get it through. It was Biden's leadership that gets it through, and that's going to make us less dependent on Taiwan for all our chips. And you think about the risks with Xi Jinping and Taiwan. We don't want to be dependent on Taiwan for things that are powering our phones, that are powering our banks. And this is going to start to bring that back. And this is actually, Rick, the challenge, the power of AI, if done well, we could see reindustrialization in America. So I'm going to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, to talk about new steel plants that are going to have 1/6 the carbon footprint as China, much more productive, place where we used to have a huge blast furnace steel plants, now having new clean steel plants with direct reduction iron or hydrogen using AI. Why don't we use this technology to reindustrialize the country? That's, I think, what President Biden is talking about. And, you know, people keep harping on his age, but he's one of the most future-oriented presidents when it actually comes to his policies.
You know, it's interesting you say that, and I had not thought about that, but he really has, both in the Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Bill, and the CHIPS and Science Act. You end up with a forward-looking, prospective idea about what an American economy looks like, you know, not in the 20th century or 19th century economic model, but in a very forward-looking model. I also think one thing that people have underestimated, and they just don't know it, is – folks, there's one plant in Taiwan called TSMC, and they manufacture the lion's share of semiconductor products in the world. If there was an earthquake or China attack, it would literally wreck the entire global economy in one day if TSMC was knocked offline. So building our own capacity to have those things, I think, is enormously consequential for the country, and enormously it's a responsible thing to do as a country.
Rick, you're actually right. I met with TSMC and Gordon Chang, who helped found it in Taiwan when we were there on a bipartisan delegation about 6 months ago. And here's the sad part. He used to work at Texas Instruments. He was educated here America. And we told him, basically, we don't want to do this manufacturing. So he leaves America and he goes to Taiwan. And we think, oh, we'll do all the – knowledge work, quote unquote, the high-end work, who needs manufacturing? And basically, he establishes all this manufacturing from our technology, our education in Taiwan with the help of the Taiwanese government. It was a colossal mistake in the United States. I often say to people, would we ever say we don't need Wall Street, let London do all the finance, or we don't need Hollywood, sure, let Bollywood make all the movies? Of course not. And yet, that's what we did with manufacturing, this president, and we're finally, on a bipartisan basis, are bringing it back.
And some of that investment that's coming back, Intel particularly, has really started to break ground and build fabs again, which is just, nothing was solving it by talking about it. This was a moment where your bill was bipartisan. It actually had some Republican, yes, folks involved in it who said, we need to do this as a country. This isn't left or right. This is, you know, a question of national, vitality and viability and sovereignty in a lot of ways, because if you don't make your own stuff, you are always at the risk of a supply chain collapsing in the good scenario, or a war cutting off the supply chain in a bad scenario.
Rick, you're absolutely right. I give a lot of credit to Senator Todd Young, Republican, Congressman Mike Gallagher, Marine, Republican, who understood this. And here's a question I often ask with Donald Trump. Even, you know, he said, okay, we got to bring manufacturing back. Fine. How many new factories came up in the 4 years he had? The reason he can't get factories to come up is, even if you're tariff, and I'm for the tariffs the president has, I was for some of the tariffs, mm-hmm, on China that Trump had, it's not enough. The way you build factories in America, the way, right, Hamilton did it, Lincoln did it, FDR did it, is you need some financings with the private sector and government collaborating with labor, mm-hmm, to do it. And that's what we're doing. It's the American economic system that Hamilton built, that China is copying, that this president is implementing.
Right.
And this, we got to do this for steel. We've got to do this for drug manufacturing. We've got to do this for shipbuilding, industry after industry, to rebuild America. Donald Trump could go talk about it, but until you have the actual mechanism to do it, which isn't reinventing the wheel, it's what America did, you aren't actually going to be able to deliver the results.
It's you mentioned Scott Galloway earlier. He said something the other day that really struck me. It's like, you can either have an economy that is an ideas economy and a manufacturing economy, or you can have a butler economy, which is services. And we don't want to be that economy. We don't want to just be a service economy in this country. We want to be an economy that does provide the value of work and rewards creativity, rewards enterprise and all that. So speaking of rewarding creativity and enterprise, Silicon Valley has for a long time sort of been watching the horizon to see if there's ever going to be some antitrust action brought, especially against the FANGs at the top level of the sort of Silicon Valley food chain. And Lina Khan from the FTC has been much more active than any FTC chairman in my lifetime. What's the take right now in your mind on where that stands? Because there is a lot of consolidation in things like ad market stuff with Google, and there are a lot of Silicon Valley folks who are very wary about it, and a lot of other people who are sort of like, finally somebody's stepping in on these things.
I think we need antitrust regulation. I've said that as a representative of Silicon Valley. Some of the companies disagree with me on it, but I co-sponsored and supported Klobuchar's bill in the Senate, mm-hmm, and it was really sad we didn't get a vote. The challenge Lena has, and I think she's done a good job, the challenge she has is that until you have a different law by the Congress, right, some of her actions were not going very far with judges because they have to operate under past law. But I also think, mm-hmm, the work she's doing on Ticketmaster and Live Nation and on drug manufacturing is equally important. But yes, we need more antitrust work on these big tech companies. You shouldn't be able to have massive acquisitions that squelch competition. You shouldn't be able to charge 30% commission. There are a number of case by case things we can go over and then need to be reformed. The one thing I'll say, Rick, is if you celebrate the innovation and entrepreneurship, which I do, of, mm-hmm, the Valley, people will be open to saying, okay, we need better laws for social media, for antitrust. I think sometimes they find that there's just this reflexive, okay, let's just dismiss all of them as negative, and we won't be having this conversation if it weren't for tech. So I think there has to be a balanced view.
I think that's right. I mean, I think there are a lot of folks who have sort of had their ideas either acquired or just by the economies of scale that are available to the Facebook, Microsoft, you know, Google matrix. They just don't, they're not able to penetrate through even with great products in an entrepreneurial way. So I think that's a role she could play. And you're right about the drug regulation stuff that she's doing. Some of that going after, I mean, people bitch about Silicon Valley patent hawks. There's nothing like a pharma patent, like pharma patent hawks and that madness. I want to talk about a tech subject that is very sort of top of mind with a lot of younger voters right now. And that is the question of where TikTok ends up going in the next year, as we see this demand for TikTok to divest from ByteDance and the Chinese government control. Where do you see the entire TikTok matter playing out? Because it is something that when I talk to younger voters, it actually is their news source. It actually is where they are getting their information about America, about politics, about the economy, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, we may disagree with this. I voted against the ban. I'm a hawk when it comes to China on economic policy, and I'm concerned about data going to China. But I think that the law should be more broad-based that says, okay, if you have a Chinese Communist Party interfering in an algorithm, then put the executives here in jail or fine them. Or if you have data going to China, then make that a penalty or crime. But to shut down the speech of 170 million Americans, I thought was too far when there was not enough compelling reason to do that. Mm-hmm. Now that it's happened, the bill's passed, what I hope is that there will be someone who acquires the app without changing it in terms of allowing, having better data privacy and making sure that algorithms are transparent, but not in terms of censoring views based on viewpoint. I think that would be very, very dangerous.
Sure. I do think a lot of the fear of the TikTok algorithm is because it is a product that by every standard, people who use TikTok love TikTok. That it is a algorithmically driven and very addictive kind of feel, and they love it. But it has become, and again, this is where I've been wrestling with it, is I worry about the Chinese government and data acquisition. That concerns me because they are acquiring data at scale. TikTok makes it easy for a big cohort of Americans. We don't know what's in the black box of the algorithm. We don't know what they're pushing or not pushing or asking ByteDance to do or not do. But I do think the solution, you know, is a divestment into an American onshored firm. And I think algorithmic transparency, though, isn't that a question where we really need to get some sort of standard across the industry where, without breaking their IP, we can at least understand what the algorithm does and at least opt out of the algorithm for underage children, because some of that stuff on TikTok and Insta that's driving to younger kids, there have been some social consequences to those things that aren't positive.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is why we've got to get the Kids Online Safety Act, which is bipartisan, Blumenthal, Marshman, passed. And it's an uphill battle because of some of the lobbying and lawyers. It's got 68 sponsors in the Senate, only 15 in the House. I just got on to try to help move it along. But basically, it calls for algorithmic transparency. Look, if you're in junior high, you should not be getting content sent to you about preying on your eating disorders or making you more conscious of how you look. It's sort of the worst experience in junior high on steroids. And this needs to stop, and this needs to be regulated. The product is, we know, it's causing mental health issues. It's causing suicide ideation among teenage girls in particular and teenagers. And so, you know, it's been a dereliction that we haven't done something so far.
And the industry is really not going to police this on their own, from what I can tell. They're just I think some of it is they feel like 230 protects them on every front. And so, no, we're not responsible for it. And I think there's also maybe some of that Silicon Valley thing of, well, just don't use the app if you don't like the outcome. I don't think that is really practical in the society we live in, where a lot of kids, like the normative social forces now are things like TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah, look, I think that there's a business reason, obviously, which is if you're a a CEO, if you're the shareholders or the board, you want to maximize user engagement, and it's going to be hard to say we want to do things to have people use the app less, spend less time on the app. That's why you need regulation. But there's also a philosophical thing. There are good parts of social media, right? You talk to folks and they'll say, well, look, if you're a gay kid in a town where you don't have a family that's supportive and you don't have others who are supportive, you can find a community on social media. Zuckerberg talks about how he didn't like playing Little League. I played Little League growing up, and he wishes he had an outlet where he could talk to other programmers. So what they point to are the good things, and I don't deny the good things. I just think that the good things can be outweighed by these awful things where you've got negative, harmful content going to young people who are still at an impressionable age. And we know that parents have talked about their kids either committing suicide or having awful experiences. Yep. We've got to fix it.
I talked to an acquaintance recently who had a daughter who got very into the whole Thinspo thing on Instagram a few years ago, and was in and out of getting treatment for anorexia because of what she saw online that was pushed at her over and over again. And it accelerated from fitness to diet to you should weigh 80 pounds. And, and it was, he and his wife, they basically, and luckily for them, they had the means. They basically had to spend like 3 years, you know, at home helping her, therapy and counseling, and getting her out of that algorithmically driven hole that she got into. Speaking of algorithmically driven holes that we tend to get into, disinformation is another hot topic that I am fascinated by and how it plays into our politics right now. Talk to us a little bit about how you see that playing out, particularly as a lot of the warnings that have been coming out of folks like NewsGuard, et cetera, talking about the scaling up of the Chinese disinformation and Russian disinformation prior to the 2024 election.
Well, I'm concerned about foreign disinformation, but I'm also just concerned about domestic misinformation.
No question. No question.
With all these bots, and you look at the ADF in Germany and the extreme right-wing group there, and a lot of their online resonance is bots that are artificially created. And I see the same thing in this country. For, you know, I think maybe we don't do the bots as much, but on the right, they have this swarm of bots that just are going to go after you. And one of the biggest things we could be doing is getting the bots off these platforms so that you can't amplify disinformation. And that's where I fear AI. Now you're going to have, just the creation of content to be so easy that you can have massive distribution of mass information. And yes, it's a problem that China has, we know for a fact that China is doing this. We know for a fact Russia is doing this. And I'm sure they're going to try to do it in our elections, if anything, just to sow discord. But I think the broader problem is that we've got people within the country who can use these tactics and do it successfully.
Yeah. Interesting you mentioned the AFD situation, because I reached out to a friend of mine who's a CSU person. And I said, you know, they really came along and took, they're like MAGA for you guys. The CSU was the old Republican Party, basically, in Germany. And the AfD came along and he goes, we can't beat them online. They're just too good at it. And it's not even that these bots are that sophisticated sometimes. It's just that the volume and the scale of it, where one idiot can control a bot army of thousands of accounts that look basically right. And all repeat some variation on the same theme. It does have a certain, like, everything counts in large amounts rule to it, I guess.
Yeah, and look, it's I may be biased here, but we're the party of Kennedy, Obama, Clinton. We believe you inspire the country to win, right? And this is sort of the modern day Lee Atwater. I mean, they used to do Willie Horton as, now they're going to make a swarm of bots spreading misinformation. I guess the Democrat liberals, if we wanted, you could do a swarm of bots doing misinformation, but that's not how we want to do our politics, because we want to do things and do things for the country. And so the question is then, okay, you've got one side that's really got all this funding of these bots and this army, and on the other side you don't. And it's one of the problems on TikTok too. I mean, we're getting killed on TikTok. Some of it because just the other side has done a lot more videos and creative videos, and we need to engage more of our young folks and creative artists, and some of it because mm-hmm. of their sophistication on these online tactics.
There are two groups that will always be early adopters of every new technology that's disruptive: the porn industry and the Republican Party. Believe me, as a former Republican, when something new technologically came along that was shiny, we were like, yes, please, let's try that.
Well, that's smart. I mean, in terms of...
They've adopted it. They really have. So, well, Ro Khanna, I want to thank you so, so much for coming on the Lincoln Project podcast today. Tell folks where they can reach you online and on the various social media platforms.
You can get me at Rep Ro Khanna on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, or on TikTok. But I want to thank you, Rick, because you've been such a brave, independent voice. I mean, you've got progressive Democrats like me talking, okay, people can say, okay, there's another Democrat. But you've been, you know, you have the credibility to speak out as an independent. And there are times you call out Democrats as well.
Sure.
And I think that voice is needed in this country. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Ro. I appreciate that. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Sounds great.